Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture in financial management. In this lecture, we will continue our discussion of capital structure and we will address some of the practical issues that arise when the chief financial officers of firms and companies are undertaking decisions related to capital structure management. پچھلے لیکچر میں ہم نے کیپٹل اسٹرکچر تھیریز کے بارے میں بات شروع کی تھی. اس میں ہم نے سب سے پہلے ملر موڈگلیانی تھیریز کو اسٹڈی کیا. ملر موڈگلیانی تھیری کے تحت ڈیٹ یا لیوریج کی وجہ سے کسی بھی فرم یا کمپنی کی ویلو پہ کوئی اثر نہیں پڑتا. اکارڈنگ ٹو دی ملر موڈگلیانی تھیری, کیپٹل اسٹرکچر has no bearing on the value of a firm because the value of the firm is fundamentally determined not by the mix of debt and equity but rather by the cash flows that are generated by the assets of the company. Uske baad phir humne trade-off theory ke baare mein baat ki. Trade-off theory ye kehti hai ki agar debt یا قرضہ حد سے زیادہ بڑھ جائے تو پھر اس کا ایک نیگیٹو افیکٹ کمپنی کی ویلیو پہ ہوتا ہے. If a company takes on an excessive amount of debt or leverage, then it has a negative effect on the overall value of the firm because of financial distress and the possibility of bankruptcy. And then we spoke about a third theory called the signaling theory for capital structure. And according to this theory, when a company decides to raise capital by equity or by debt, then it is giving a signal to the market. Generally speaking, when a firm decides to raise capital in the form of equity or stock issuance, then the signal it is giving to the market is that the company expects its earnings forecast to be weak. That is why they are willing to share the profits with new shareholders. Similarly, when a company tries to raise capital in the form of debt, then it gives a strong signal about the company to the market and to the investors as a whole. Why? Because that means that the company's earnings are strong enough to be able to pay the interest, and the company is raising capital in the form of debt so that they do not have to share their future earnings growth with more shareholders. Now, this is as far as the theory goes. And keep in mind that the Miller-Modigliani theory is based on an ideal world, a world where there are efficient markets, rational investors, no taxes, and no transaction costs, and where everybody has access to the same amount of information. So this is an ideal situation. But in the real world, practically speaking, this does not apply. Practically speaking, when a firm decides to borrow money or take a loan, then it changes its capital structure. It changes the ratio of debt to equity in the company. And when a company takes on more loans, then in the beginning, its weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, drops. Why does it drop? Well, quite simply, because, generally speaking, the cost of debt is less than the cost of equity. In other words, generally speaking, the interest that a company has to pay on a loan is less than the rate of return that a company should pay to its shareholders. And this is an outcome of the risk theory that we spoke about earlier. Companies should be paying a higher rate of return to their shareholders because shares generally carry more uncertainty and more risk than debt. Remember that interest cash flows for debt are guaranteed, but dividend cash flows for stocks are not. So, the point to remember then is that when a company takes on more loans, its weighted average cost of capital or WACC initially falls, but then it reaches a minimum point after which it begins to rise again. And we spoke about this in the previous lecture. Why does it begin to rise again? Because, basically, of the trade-off theory. Dekhi, kisi bhi company ki weighted average cost of capital ek had tak niche jayegi. Aur uske baad wo dobara badhni shuru ho jayegi. Aur uski wajah ye hai ki ek had ke baad excessive debt ki wajah se bankruptcy ki threat hoti hai. Kisi bhi company ko. When a company takes on too much debt, there is a higher chance of the company going bankrupt. And therefore, the cost of equity that the shareholders expect to receive from the firm goes up dramatically, thereby pushing up the weighted average cost of capital. So this was what I'm talking about right now, the traditionalist view of capital structure, where the weighted average cost of capital is a parabola with a minimum point, and that minimum point is the point of optimal or best capital structure. That is the point that companies are trying to reach so that they can minimize the cost that they have to pay to their investors, whether they are investors in the form of debt holders or stockholders. This is the same point at which the total value of the firm will be maximized. At the same point of optimal capital structure, the total value of the firm as measured by the value of the equity plus the value of the debt will be maximized. So, weighted average cost of capital ko numerically calculate karne ke liye, basically, do tarike hain. Pehli approach, EBIT approach kehlati hai, ya earnings before interest and taxation. Aur dusri approach, NOI, ya net operating income, ya ke tax shield approach kehlati hai. So let's talk about the first approach, the earnings before interest and taxation or EBIT approach. In this, the thing to remember is the logical sequence of the steps in calculating the WACC. The starting point is, of course, as the name suggests, EBIT, earnings before interest and taxation. That has to be given to you. From the EBIT, you then calculate the required rate of return on the equity. You can then calculate the value of the equity, the market value of the equity. From that, you can then calculate the total value of the firm, which is equal to the value of the equity plus the value of the debt. Once you have the total value of the firm, then you can calculate your debt and equity ratios. You know your cost of equity and the cost of debt. Therefore, you can calculate the WACC, which is equal to the fraction of debt multiplied by the cost of debt plus the fraction of equity multiplied by the cost of equity. Now, let's talk about the second approach. That is known as the NOI or tax shield approach. Now, over here, the starting point is to calculate the value of the levered company. Remember, levered means company when it has taken on debt. So, the value of the levered company can be calculated from the value of the 100% equity company by the simple relationship that the VL is equal to VU plus T times D. And what that means is that the value of the levered company is equal to the value of the 100% equity company plus the tax shield. And the tax shield is equal to the tax rate multiplied by the value of the debt. That's T multiplied by D. So once you have the value of the levered company, VL, then it's straightforward because you can then calculate the value of the equity, which is equal to the total value minus the value of the debt. Once you have the value of the equity, you can then back calculate the required rate of return on equity or the cost of equity. And the relationship that we use over there is that the value of the equity is equal to the EBIT divided by the required return on equity. And then finally, since you have all of the variables defined, you can calculate the weighted average cost of capital. So these are the two approaches that are practically used in the real world by financial managers in order to calculate the weighted average cost of capital. Now, before I move into some very, very qualitative and practical rule of thumbs and generalizations that managers use in deciding on the best capital structure for the company, let me just review your understanding of Miller Modigliani and the theories that we spoke about earlier. Remember that Miller and Modigliani proposed two theories. The first one was the case, the ideal case of a world which has no taxes. And in that particular case, they mentioned that the value of the firm is entirely unaffected by debt. So what they said was that the value of the levered firm, a firm that has taken on debt or loans, is identical to the same firm if it has not taken on a loan. So, in that case, VL is equal to VU. And VU is equal to EBIT divided by the weighted average cost of capital. In the case of 100% equity firm, the weighted average cost of capital is simply equal to the cost of equity because there is no debt. Now, remember that in this case of Miller Modigliani with no taxes, the weighted average cost of capital is constant and fixed, unchanging, and also the value of the company is fixed. Because fundamentally, what they are saying is that the value is unaffected by debt. So for the case of Miller Modigliani, without taxes, the ideal world, we can calculate the cost of equity for the levered company with debt, that is equal to the cost of equity for the unlevered company plus the risk premium. And this formula follows the same logic that we saw for the security market line equation when we were talking about risk theory earlier. How is the risk premium defined in this case? Quite simply, it's equal to the cost of equity for the unlevered company minus the risk-free rate of return or the T-bill rate of return multiplied by the debt-to-equity ratio. So this was the case for Miller Modigliani without taxes, an ideal situation. Miller Modigliani also made a change to their original theory, and they analyzed the situation for the case that a company has to pay taxes, corporate taxes. And in that particular case, there are slightly different formulas. Same formulas have to be adjusted for taxes. And if we take a look at the slide, we can go over the formulas for the case of a situation where we take taxes into account. So if you take a look at the slide for Miller Modigliani with taxes, you'll see that we can calculate the value of the levered firm, VL, that is equal to VU plus TC multiplied by D. Again, VU refers to the value of the unlevered firm, 100% equity. TC times D is equal to the tax shield. This is the savings associated with the payment of interest because it is not taxed. D refers to the market value of the debt, and TC refers to the corporate tax rate. Now remember that in this case, if you take a look at the formula, you can see that the value of the levered company, VL, is rising continuously and steadily, and the weighted average cost of capital will therefore fall steadily. The value of the unlevered firm, VU, can also be calculated independently. That is equal to the EBIT multiplied by 1 minus TC divided by REU. And here REU refers to the cost of equity for the unlevered firm. Notice that here we have scaled down or reduced the EBIT by the tax factor 1 minus TC. So what you see in the numerator of this equation is EBIT multiplied by 1 minus TC, and that is the EBIT or earnings before interest and taxation discounted by the tax rate. Finally, you can calculate the cost of equity for the levered firm, and that is equal to the cost of equity for the unlevered firm, REU, plus the risk premium adjusted for tax. And that risk premium is REU minus RRF multiplied by 1 minus TC multiplied by D over E. So far we have been talking about theoretical aspects of capital structure, and now we are in a position to solve numericals in order to calculate the weighted average cost of capital and the optimal capital structure according to these theoretical formulas. Now, what about day-to-day rules for corporate management as far as capital structure goes? In other words, how do financial managers on a day-to-day basis make decisions related to capital structure, and how do they decide if they should take on more debt and how much more debt they should take on? So for this, we will study some of the general rules of thumb that managers use in order to make decisions related to capital structure. Before we go into that, we need to understand the link between capital structure and stock price. Now, as we've already mentioned, as the percentage of debt in a company increases, then the weighted average cost of capital reaches a minimum point, which is the optimal capital structure, and after that it begins to rise again. And it begins to rise because of the possibility and the risk of bankruptcy and financial distress. Now, this point at which the weighted average cost of capital is minimized is the best capital structure, theoretically speaking. This is also the same point at which the value of the firm, the total value of the firm, will be maximized. And logically then, this is also the same point at which the share price of this firm will be maximized. Why? Because the share price of the firm can be defined in two ways. Either it is equal to the total value of the firm, which is equal to debt plus equity, divided by the number of original shares in the company, or you can define the value of the firm as the value of the equity alone divided by the exact present number of shares outstanding for the company. Now, in either case, the share price is linked to the value of the firm, and maximization of the share price was one of the fundamental objectives in this course on financial management. So the point at which the value of the firm is maximized is also the point at which the share price of the firm is maximized. So what effect will debt and capital structure have on the share price? Quite simply, according to the traditionalist view, as the level of debt or loans of a particular company increase, then the share price will at first go up, it will reach a maximum point, and then it will begin to fall again. So the shape of the share price curve, if plotted against the level of debt, is an inverted parabola. And this maximum point for the share price is the optimal capital structure, the best combination of debt to equity for the company. Now, this is important because the share price is a fundamental objective in financial management, which is maximization of the share price or the shareholder wealth. And also, the share price is a measure of the capital yield or the overall return that an investor can expect from investing in this company. So now let's ask ourselves what impact capital structure and debt will have on the earnings of a firm and on the risk of a firm. So we will measure risk in terms of the standard deviation or variance of the earnings. Now, experimentally, it's been shown that as the level of debt of a firm increases, then the earnings per share initially increases, reaches a maximum point, and then it falls again. So again, it has the shape of an inverted parabola, just like the graph of the share price plotted against the level of debt. Now, what do we mean by earnings per share? Just to remind you of the formula, the EPS is equal to the net income after tax divided by the number of shares outstanding. So there are two variables, the net income and the number of shares outstanding, that affect whether or not the EPS will rise or fall. Why does the EPS initially go up as the level of debt increases? Because we can interpret this as equity being replaced by debt. As a company takes on more debt and replaces that, the equity, by the debt, then the number of shares outstanding will decrease. And when the number of shares outstanding decrease, they are in the denominator of the ratio, therefore the EPS will increase and go up. So that is why in the beginning the EPS will rise. But then it will slow down and reach a maximum point and begin to fall again. Why? Because at that point the EBIT and the net income reduce greatly because of the excessive amount of interest payments that need to be made on the large amount of debt. So what we are saying is that when a company takes on too much debt and the size of the debt is very large, then it has to make a very large amount of interest payments. And they appear in the form of financial charges in the P&L statement or the income statement. Therefore, the net income drops sharply. And because the net income falls and it is in the numerator of the EPS ratio, therefore the EPS will also fall. Now, will this point at which the EPS is maximum be the same point at which the share price was maximum? No. Because remember that when we were talking about share price earlier on, that is linked to the market value of the company. Whereas the earnings do not have a direct link with the market. So the capital structure point at which the EPS is maximized is not the same as the point at which the share price is maximized. The optimal point for capital structure refers to the point at which the share price is maximized, not the point at which the EPS is maximized. Because we are interested in share price and market value of the company. Now, let's talk about the level of risk. So, if we measure the level of risk of this firm in terms of the standard deviation formula and apply it to the earnings, then we would see, based on experimental studies that have been carried out, that as the company takes on more and more debt, and as it becomes more and more leveraged, then the effect of the level of debt on the earnings multiplies. In other words, as we mentioned, leverage has a magnifying or multiplying effect on the variation in the earnings. And if you take a look at the graph of EPS versus the percentage of debt, then you will see that for companies that have a large amount of debt, in other words, companies that are highly leveraged, the slope of the EPS graph is very, very high, and it is very steep. And that shows that the company is very highly leveraged, has a high percentage of debt in its capital structure, and therefore its movement in the earnings is a lot more sensitive to changes in sales and changes in capital structure. So a firm becomes more risky from the standpoint of earnings if it takes on too much debt. As you already know, and we spoke about this earlier when we were studying risk theory, that when a company takes on more debt, it increases the financial risk component of the total risk also. So, ye to humne kuch capital structure ke bare mein nazriyati baatein ki aur numerical calculations ke hawale se humne baatein ki ke weighted average cost of capital ko kaise calculate kiya ja sakta hai aur capital structure ka share price aur earnings pe kya impact hoga. Lekin in theories mein bahut si weaknesses bhi hain, to unke bare mein ab baat karte hain. The first weakness that we find in capital structure theory is that if you are using the formulas from the Miller-Modigliani models or the traditionalist theory, or if you are using the EBIT approach to calculating WACC or the tax shield approach, then you have to deal with certain forecasting errors. it is very difficult to forecast the changes that will take place in the cost of equity and the cost of debt as the level of debt in a firm increases. This is a difficult exercise, and there is a large margin of error. Similarly, it is difficult to forecast what the earnings before interest and taxation or the EBIT will be as the level of debt in a firm changes. It's very difficult to come up with a relationship between EBIT and the level of debt in a company. And these are weaknesses in the mathematical modeling of capital structure theory. One of the other weaknesses is that the computation of the weighted average cost of capital and the share price and the earnings per share is very, very sensitive to minor changes and differences in the estimates for cost of equity and cost of debt and in the estimates for EBIT. So minor mistakes in the estimation of these variables can lead to a large error in the calculation of the WACC or the share price. One of the major weaknesses in capital structure theory is that they focus on market value. In fact, financial management focuses on market value because our objective is to maximize the shareholder wealth, and shareholder wealth is measured in terms of the market value of the shares. However, if you're talking about small companies or proprietorships that are owned by single owners, then the shareholders do not include the general public or the investors as a whole. The shareholder for a proprietorship is one person, the owner. The shareholder for partnerships is just a few individuals, not the general public. And in this case, it has been argued that the market value may be irrelevant. Unless the proprietor or the partners are considering selling this company and assessing a market value for it. Finally then, capital structure theory makes it seem as if the only thing that is important in maximizing the share price is capital structure or the relative percentage of debt and equity in a company. But this is not at all true. If this is the impression you're getting, then please eliminate this impression entirely, because remember that fundamentally stock prices should be driven by the cash flows of the assets and by the operations of the business, not by maneuvering and manipulation of the finances, and not by manipulating the capital structure of the company. So, although we mentioned that the share price will reach a maximum point after which it will fall as you increase the level of debt in a company, please don't forget that fundamentally share prices should be driven by healthy operations, healthy earnings and cash flows of the business, and not by manipulation of the debt to equity ratios of the company. So, in practical day-to-day life, how do financial managers make decisions regarding capital structure? One of the first things that capital structure management requires the financial manager to take into account is financial stability. Most managers will prefer to maintain stable finances and steady capital structure ratios unless there have been large changes in the balance sheet of the company or in the ownership of the company, the managers will prefer to maintain financial stability and stability in the capital structure. This is also known as conservatism in management. So instead of changing the capital structure of the firm every week or every month in response to changes in the earnings, the managers prefer to keep the capital structure steady and constant, generally speaking. The second principle that managers go by is that of long-term viability. It's generally a lot more important to keep in mind the long-term success of the financial health of the company rather than aiming for short-term maximization of share price. Unfortunately, there is a tendency in some managers to aim for short-term share price maximization because that creates a positive perception in the stock market about this company. But in the long term, this will not help because the focus has to be on improving the fundamental operations and the financial and operational health of the company. It's very common for financial managers to aim for capital structure targets, and they arrive at these targets by means of financial ratios. So many financial managers pick certain target values for financial ratios, and they try to make sure that these ratios are met. One of the important ratios is the TIE, or the TIE ratio, times interest earned, which is equal to the EBIT divided by the value of the interest payments. And many financial managers will try to aim for a ratio of 2.0 or 2.5. And this is considered to be the optimal range for the ratio between 2.0 and 2.5. Another ratio that financial managers use frequently is the long-term debt to total capitalization ratio. Long-term debt, meaning long-term loans, long-term leases, and so on. And total capitalization means debt plus preferred equity plus common equity. So the percentage of debt in the capital structure, percentage of long-term debt, should not be higher than 30%. This is another rule of thumb or general rule that financial managers follow. Finally, some financial managers choose to use the FCC or the fixed charges coverage ratio, and the advantage of the FCC ratio is that it allows you to take into account fixed financial expenses other than interest as well. For example, lease payments and the sinking fund payments that companies might be making are also taken into account in this ratio. So this FCC ratio is a slightly modified form of the TIE ratio, the TIE ratio. And managers will try to aim for these target financial ratios in the hope that the firm will be financially stable and that they will be operating at optimal capital structure ratios. Finally, something that we spoke about earlier when we were talking about the signaling theory in capital structure, many financial managers will try to maintain a reserve debt capacity. They'll try to save up some of their potential for taking on debt for later, when they might need debt in order to finance a project that promises good earnings and cash flows. There are some other subjective factors that need to be taken into account when a financial manager is trying to decide how much debt that a company should take on and what its best capital structure should be. One of them is that management often prefers to raise capital in the form of debt so that they do not have to share equity with more shareholders. Because when you raise capital through equity, then you have to give away voting rights and control in the business. Remember, equity means ownership and control. So sometimes management prefers to raise capital in the form of debt so that they do not give away control over the company. There is another reason why managers prefer to raise capital in the form of debt, and that is that if a company does not take on any debt, then it is more likely to come under attack by investors who are known as corporate raiders. And these corporate raiders are in the business of leveraged buyouts. Leveraged buyouts are schemes where certain individuals borrow money from the bank in order to buy another company. This debt is transferred onto the books of this company. This company's cash flows are used by these individuals, and the assets of these companies can be liquidated or sold to raise cash for this individual. And these individuals manage to succeed because they promise the shareholders higher share prices and higher earnings. Why? Because you will recall that when the level of debt in a 100% equity company increases, then the share price and the earnings also increase. So these individuals promise the shareholders higher share price and higher earnings, provided they give control of the company to them. Then they take over the company and possibly liquidate the assets and siphon the cash. And this has caused a lot of problems, particularly in the United States and in Europe. And this is one of the reasons why companies should keep a certain amount of debt in the capital structure. Naturally, you should also realize that firms that have solid assets that can be mortgaged or given as security against the loan have an easier time getting debt. Similarly, firms that have stable earnings and that have operating leverage, which we talked about in detail, the concept of operating leverage, these firms have not only greater facility in getting debt, it is also easier for them to service debt because they have low overheads and low fixed costs and high earnings. Finally, I should mention that for companies that have high profits, over a period of time, they can save these profits and plow them back, reinvest them in the company in the form of retained earnings. And retained earnings and cash balances of the company can be excellent sources of capital because there are no costs associated to raising capital this way. In conclusion, you should also keep in mind that companies that are in the highest tax bracket have the most to gain by taking on debt because of the interest savings and the interest shield that is attached to the interest payments on debt. So the greatest benefit of debt is derived to those companies that are in the highest tax bracket, generally speaking. So with this, I will stop the presentation of the new material for this particular lecture. we have almost completed the material on capital structure. Kindly go over these slides in detail and please spend some time doing the problems in the homework assignment, because it is very important for you to be able to numerically calculate the impact of capital structure and changes in the level of debt on the value of a firm, the share price, the earnings, and the weighted average cost of capital. We started off this lecture by reviewing the capital structure theories. We went over the ideal situation of Miller-Modigliani without taxes. We went over Miller-Modigliani with taxes. We went over the two fundamental approaches for calculating WACC, the EBIT approach and the tax shield or NOI approach. We then looked at the impact of capital structure and leverage on the share price, and also the impact of capital structure on the earnings and the overall risk associated with changes in the earnings of a firm. And we mentioned that we have to keep in mind the optimal capital structure point at which the share price is maximized, the weighted average cost of capital is minimized, and the total value of the firm is maximized. Finally, we close this lecture by going into some practical day-to-day principles that financial managers follow for capital structure management. And it's important to keep in mind certain targets that they keep for financial ratios. And it's also important to remember some of the advantages of debt and some of the advantages that companies that have high operating leverage and good earnings have over other companies in taking on debt. I would like to thank you for your kind attention and patience. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan, and Mubashir Humayun, I thank you. Khuda Hafiz and Assalamu Alaikum.